Imagine for a second that you are pulling up to your local gas station. You're running late for work, you swipe your card, you grab that heavy rubber handle, squeeze it, and absolutely nothing
Yeah,
happens.
worst way to start the morning.
Right. The pumps are just completely dry. Or picture waking up in the middle of a freezing winter night.
Yeah.
You pull the blankets tight, you turn up your thermostat, you hear the familiar click of the system engaging, but the heat never actually comes on.
It's a chilling thought, really, literally and figuratively.
It really is. And I think we completely take for granted that the fuel in our cars and the energy warming our homes will just, always be there waiting at the push button. But what actually keeps that massive, infinitely complex machinery of the oil and gas industry running when the normal workforce, like the people who actually turn the heavy wrenches, monitor the pressurized dials, manage the flow of volatile chemicals, what happens when they suddenly aren't there?
It's a scenario that most of us, frankly, never spend a single second thinking about. But the reality is that the global energy sector is incredibly fragile. I mean, we are not just talking about empty chairs in a corporate office building, right?
Yeah, where the worst case scenario is what, a delayed email?
Exactly. A delayed email, maybe a missed Zoom call. Here we are talking about highly sensitive, incredibly volatile environments. A sudden drop in personnel doesn't just mean a dip in profits. It can lead to catastrophic operational failures, environmental disasters, and massive supply chain blackouts.
Which is exactly our mission for this deep dive. Today, we are unpacking the incredibly high stakes, largely hidden world of on-demand staffing for oil and gas companies.
It's a fascinating area.
It really is. We are going to explore how massive facilities maintain operational continuity during labor disputes, union strikes, planned shutdowns, and, sudden natural disasters. And just to be crystal clear right out of the gate, so you know exactly where we stand, we are exploring the logistics of labor disputes and strikes purely from an operational perspective.
Right, maintaining absolute neutrality here.
Yes. Absolute neutrality. We are not taking the side of corporate management, and we are not taking the side of the labor unions. We are strictly looking at the cold, hard mechanics of how this massive industrial system functions under extreme human stress.
Exactly. Our focus is entirely on the how and the why of keeping the lights on. Because when a labor dispute or an emergency occurs, the physics and the chemistry of a petrochemical refinery, they don't simply pause because of human disagreements.
The chemicals don't care about a contract dispute.
They really don't. The pressure in the pipes keeps building, the chemical reactions keep occurring, and the operational demands remain completely unforgiving.
Okay, let's unpack this. Before we get into the really granular logistics of how a company securely moves temporary workers across a hostile picket line, we have to talk about why this is so critical in the first place. I mean, you cannot just hang a handwritten "closed for the weekend" sign on a refinery.
You really can't. These work sites, and whether we are talking about massive coastal refineries, inland distribution terminals, or thousands of miles of pipeline operations, they require continuous 24/7 uninterrupted operation.
Right.
So, staffing companies operating in this specific space, they aren't just filling open roles to keep HR happy. They are actively protecting highly tuned production schedules. They are maintaining critical site safety. But most importantly, they are stopping a localized labor interruption from cascading into a systemic national operational failure.
It makes me think of look like a massive freight train speeding down the tracks at 100 miles an hour.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
Yeah, you can't just slam on the brakes because the conductor needs to step away from the controls. If you try to stop that kind of extreme momentum instantaneously, the friction and the physics just take over and the whole thing violently derails.
That is the perfect way to look at it. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the stakes of that derailment are immense and immediate. Let's look at the actual mechanism of what happens when staffing is suddenly delayed in oil and gas. It affects every single link in the chain almost instantly.
How so? Like, what's the first thing to break?
Well, if you don't have the specialized personnel to load the outbound distribution trucks, your local on-site storage facilities start to back up.
Right, because the liquid has to go somewhere.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And when those storage tanks hit maximum capacity, the incoming pipeline literally has nowhere to send the raw product. So the pressure builds. Suddenly, to avoid a rupture, production at the extraction site has to be choked back or entirely shut down.
Wow, it just ripples backwards.
Instantly, equipment readiness drops, environmental regulatory obligations are immediately at risk, and customer commitments like making sure that corner gas station you mentioned has fuel are completely broken. The dominoes fall incredibly fast.
That sounds terrifying, honestly.
It is. That is why the staffing provider's role has to be incredibly practical. They have to instantly identify the exact labor categories needed, screen available workers who already have industry experience, and deploy them under incredibly strict, high-stakes site rules.
So since we established that you can't just stop the freight train without causing a disaster, the logical next step has to be intense preparation. You cannot wait until the train is violently shaking and sparking off the rails to pick up the phone and call for help.
That is the crucial second piece of the puzzle. Waiting for a strike or a walkout to actually begin before you start looking for replacement workers, that creates massive, unacceptable operational risk.
So when does the planning actually start?
Oh, months in advance. The logistical planning has to happen months before union contract deadlines are reached, long before strike votes are ever cast, or before lockouts are even a whisper of a possibility.
Wait, are companies really building massive staffing plans before a strike vote even happens? Doesn't that seem a bit premature?
It sounds that way, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I have to push back on that a little bit because it sounds incredibly provocative. Are you telling me that management is building these massive, complex shadow staffing plans and maybe even booking hotel rooms for temporary workers before a vote is even cast?
In many cases, yes.
If union leaders find out management is already preparing for a strike, doesn't that inherently trigger the strike? It sounds like they're anticipating failure in the negotiations and just pouring gasoline on the fire.
It is a totally fair reaction, and optics are always a huge concern. But you have to view it through the lens of absolute risk management. The goal here isn't to provoke a fight or to just, you know, find workers in a blind panic once negotiations break down.
Right. It's about not derailing the train.
Exactly. The goal is to build a robust, impenetrable workforce continuity plan. Think of it as an essential high-priced insurance policy. In a continuous operation, any hesitation equals downtime.
Right.
And downtime costs millions of dollars a day.
Millions. Wow.
Yeah. A specialized staffing company works with the employer well ahead of any negotiation milestone to evaluate exactly which critical positions would need temporary coverage if things go south. They are really just doing the math on survival.
And the logistics of that planning phase, I mean, they are absolutely wild when you actually break them down. They aren't just collecting resumes.
Oh, no, far from it.
They're estimating precise headcounts, shift by shift, site by site, and function by function. They are reviewing intense security access requirements. They are even pre-arranging massive transportation and lodging matrices for when the sites are remote.
That's a huge part of it.
I mean, imagine having to suddenly house, feed, and transport 300 replacement workers to a pipeline facility in a tiny town in North Dakota that only has one motel.
It is a staggering logistical footprint. You have to establish clear reporting procedures so these new workers know exactly who their supervisor is the second they step off the bus. You have to confirm that thousands of pieces of specialized personal protective equipment like hard hats, fire retardant clothing, respirators are perfectly sized and ready to go.
Wow, even sizing the uniforms ahead of time.
Yes, because if negotiations officially break down at midnight, or a natural disaster suddenly makes the regular workforce unavailable, that shadow plan has to be activated instantly.
So we have this massive insurance policy in place, this incredibly detailed continuity plan. But that brings up the next major hurdle, which honestly sounds like the most dangerous part of all. Who are we actually bringing onto these sites?
Right, the human element.
Yeah, because these are highly hazardous, safety-sensitive environments. We are talking about pipeline yards, chemical plants, and LNG facilities.
Let's actually pause on LNG facilities for a second, because that perfectly illustrates the danger here. LNG stands for liquefied natural gas. To transport natural gas efficiently, they cool it down to about negative 260 degrees Fahrenheit, basically turning it into a liquid.
Which shrinks its volume massively, right?
Correct. But it also means you are dealing with cryogenic temperatures that can instantly shatter normal steel or cause severe frostbite. And that's combined with extreme flammability if it vaporizes and finds an ignition source.
That's incredibly volatile.
Exactly. You absolutely cannot allow casual generic labor placement in a facility like that. Strict, unforgiving procedures have to be followed before any worker can even step foot inside the perimeter fence. We are talking mandatory drug and alcohol screening, rigorous criminal and industrial background checks, specialized site access documentation, and intensive safety orientations.
That makes total sense. You can't just treat everyone like a generic body to fill a spot. It reminds me of the logistics of running a busy hospital. Well, imagine bringing temporary workers into an emergency room. You absolutely need temps to manage the massive supply rooms, to mop the floors, to keep the environment sterile, to direct incoming ambulance traffic in the bay, maybe handle administrative intake.
Right, the essential support.
Yeah. By having a temporary worker do all of that, you free up the highly paid, highly specialized surgical nurse to stay in the operating room where they are actually needed. But you do not just hand a temporary worker a scalpel and ask them to perform open-heart surgery.
God, no.
Right. There has to be a hard, impenetrable line between support tasks and highly skilled, dangerous tasks.
What's fascinating here is how explicit the industry is about that exact distinction. The most effective staffing companies rigorously separate skilled roles from support roles, because poor role matching isn't just financially inefficient in this industry, it is physically dangerous.
It gets people killed.
Exactly. The staffing company doesn't replace the employer's existing overarching safety program. Instead, they act as the ultimate gatekeeper, ensuring every temporary worker is perfectly briefed and assigned strictly to support roles. This keeps the logistical arteries of the site moving, so that the internal specialized teams can handle the surgery, as you put it.
Let's look at what those vital support roles actually entail on a day-to-day basis. We were talking about general laborers moving heavy materials, warehouse workers organizing parts, drivers transporting equipment across massive campuses.
Like flaggers managing the intense flow of heavy truck traffic, dispatchers, site cleanup crews.
Yeah, these are the people ensuring the $150 an hour specialized pipe fitter never has to put down their welding torch to go find a missing valve in the warehouse.
Exactly. And then you have the roles that require a much closer, highly specialized review before a temporary worker is ever placed. Forklift operators maneuvering massive loads around explosive chemicals, welders, heavy equipment mechanics, and crucially, roles like safety attendants and confined space attendants.
I want to focus on that for a second, because imagine you are listening to this right now and you are assigned as a confined space attendant. You are the person standing just outside a massive, dark, and closed steel tank while someone else is deep inside it performing maintenance.
Very high stakes.
Your entire job is monitoring the external air quality, managing their lifeline, and ensuring they don't succumb to invisible toxic gases.
It is literally a matter of life and death. You absolutely cannot put an untrained, unvetted person pulled off a generic job board into that role. You need verified certifications, deep industrial experience, and total equipment familiarity. So the staffing partner is playing this incredibly complex game of role roulette, matching the exact right human to the exact right risk level and doing it with extreme precision.
Which perfectly transitions us into the actual crucible. We have the plan, we understand the distinct roles, we know the safety parameters. Now, what happens when the tension snaps? Let's put these workers into the actual high-pressure environments on the ground.
This is where the rubber meets the road.
Yeah. There are three major operational scenarios where this kicks in. Strikes and walkouts, shutdowns and turnarounds, and sudden natural emergencies. Let's start with strikes. If a union walks out, how do they handle the raw human logistics of bringing replacement workers across a highly emotionally charged picket line without everything descending into absolute chaos or violence?
This raises an important question about physical security and chain of custody. Strike staffing requires intense coordination that goes far beyond just handing someone a hard hat. The staffing company has to work hand in hand with corporate legal counsel, private security providers, and local law enforcement.
Because it's tense.
Very. You are dealing with angry picket lines, local media cameras, and a very hostile atmosphere.
So how do they actually move them in, practically speaking? They don't just have temps drive their own Honda Civics through a crowd of striking workers.
Right. No, absolutely not. That would be a massive safety and security risk. You establish clear, remote staging locations miles away from the facility. The temporary workers park there, they are screened there, and then they are securely bused into the facility, often in vehicles with tinted windows.
Oh, wow. Tinted windows.
Yes. You have very strict badge procedures to prevent any unauthorized access or potential sabotage. The shift handoffs have to be orchestrated perfectly.
It sounds exactly like a military deployment.
It really has to be. Mm-hmm. Temporary workers must be heavily coordinated alongside site supervisors. Their assignments must be crystal clear from the second their boots hit the ground. A disorganized deployment creates massive confusion at the entry points and puts unnecessary dangerous pressure on the internal supervisors who are already stretched incredibly thin.
Yeah, you don't want the supervisors babysitting.
Exactly. The specialized staffing company is there to absorb that logistical nightmare, reduce the confusion, and handle that emotional environment with total professionalism.
Okay, so that is how you handle a hostile dispute. But we also have to talk about shutdowns and turnarounds. Now, unlike a sudden strike, these are planned events, right? But the math behind them still sounds incredibly intense.
They are massive undertakings. A turnaround is basically a scheduled period where an entire section of a refinery or plant is deliberately taken offline for essential, deep maintenance, technological upgrades, or critical regulatory inspections.
But they know it's coming.
They do. It is planned months or years in advance, but the schedule is aggressively compressed because every single day that the plant is offline, it is bleeding money. We are talking millions of dollars a day in lost production.
So they have to just flood the zone. They
Yeah.
need massive crews for prep work, deep industrial cleanup, managing the expanded tool rooms, staging heavy equipment.
Yep, all of it.
And they need them fast to reduce the overtime pressure on the regular internal employees, right? Because those folks will quickly burn out if they work 20 straight 12-hour shifts.
Exactly. The invisible economic math of a turnaround dictates that spending a fortune on a shadow workforce of temporary support staff is actually the cheaper option compared to extending the downtime.
That makes a lot of sense.
A well-supported turnaround means the highly skilled, specialized contractors can focus entirely on the complex work. If the support staffing is poor, the entire multi-million dollar schedule grinds to a halt because highly paid, specialized crews are standing around waiting for heavy materials to be moved or hazardous workspaces to be cleaned.
And then you have the third major scenario, pure unadulterated emergencies, completely unplanned events. You know, a Category 4 hurricane slams into the Gulf Coast, a catastrophic equipment failure causes a fire, or a sudden massive spill.
The timeline completely vanishes.
Right. You have to move from a desperate request to full deployment in a matter of hours or days, not weeks.
This is where the 24/7 nature of the industry really shows its teeth. A continuous environment cannot pause the flooding or the fire to let managers write job descriptions, post them online, interview candidates, and onboard workers through a traditional 2-week process.
Yeah, HR isn't doing standard interviews during a hurricane.
Exactly. If a hurricane damages a vital facility and the local roads are flooded, meaning the regular workforce physically cannot get to work, the staffing provider's ability to instantly tap into an available remote labor pool and verify worker readiness, that becomes the literal lifeline of the facility.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Let me play devil's advocate for a second.
Sure, go ahead.
If a multi-billion-dollar facility's actual survival depends on this level of hyper-coordination, whether it is a strike or a hurricane, who actually holds the keys? Aren't all staffing agencies basically the same at their core?
Oh, not at all.
I mean, isn't it just a giant Rolodex of names in an office somewhere that they call down when someone needs a body and a hard hat? Why not just call, Joe's local temp agency?
That is a very common misconception. And in the oil and gas sector, that assumption will get people hurt and cost you your facility. A generic provider that does a fine job placing office administrators or retail workers will completely collapse under the logistical pressure of a petrochemical plant deployment.
They just don't have the chops for it.
They don't. You have to evaluate providers on very specific criteria. Do they possess actual industry experience? Do they inherently understand the safety awareness and operational discipline specific to oil and gas?
Geographic reach seems like a massive factor here, too. I mean, a lot of these work sites are incredibly remote, miles away from major infrastructure.
Oh, absolutely.
If you are a local temp agency in a big city, you probably don't have the logistical strength to support, feed, and house a pipeline crew 300 miles away in the wilderness.
Precisely. And you must look at shift flexibility. We are talking about facilities that require rotating coverage around the clock. You need a partner who possesses specific labor dispute experience, like a company that knows exactly how to maintain professionalism, secure transportation, and chain of custody control during a hostile strike.
Which is why specialized companies like Regional Supplemental Services or RSS Inc. are so critical in this exact space. They are built for these exact scenarios, right?
Yes, exactly.
They step in to stabilize operations quickly when union activity or short-term emergency needs suddenly exceed the available staff. They don't need to be taught what a confined space is.
No, they already know.
They clearly understand the massive difference between sending someone to answer phones in an air-conditioned lobby and sending someone to safely manage heavy 18-wheeler traffic flow at a highly combustible LNG facility.
It is entirely about having a partner who speaks the operational language of the site natively. When a crisis hits, The site supervisors absolutely do not have the time or the bandwidth to train a generic staffing agency on basic industrial safety or hazardous materials protocols.
They're a little busy putting out fires, literally and figuratively.
Exactly. The agency needs to arrive already knowing the extreme expectations so they can seamlessly integrate their support workforce into the existing high-stress structure without missing a single beat.
So what does this all mean? We started by talking about that frustrating feeling of pulling up to an empty gas station or waking up in a cold house in the dead of winter. What this deep dive reveals is that the reliability of the fuel in your car and the energy powering your city doesn't just rely on the brilliant engineers and the daily operators who are there when things are going perfectly.
It really doesn't.
It relies heavily on a completely invisible, highly orchestrated, heavily vetted army of on-demand workers. It relies on logistical masterminds who step into the absolute breach when messy labor disputes, violent storms, or catastrophic equipment failures threaten to bring the whole system crashing down.
It is a remarkable, largely unseen safety net that keeps modern society functioning. But, you know, looking at all this incredibly detailed human-centric preparation, it leaves me with a fascinating thought experiment about the future.
Okay, where are we going with this?
Well, as these massive oil and gas facilities become increasingly automated, as they rely more heavily on artificial intelligence, predictive maintenance algorithms, and advanced sensor networks, how will the nature of this essential temporary support evolve over the next decade?
Oh, wow. That is a wild thought.
Right. Think about it. During a tense labor strike or the aftermath of a massive hurricane 10 years from now, will staffing companies still be scrambling to deploy human traffic flaggers, dispatchers, and manual cleanup crews?
Probably not.
Or will the specialized staffing agencies of the future be responsible for deploying and managing massive fleets of temporary drones, automated rovers, and AI-driven robots to keep the facility running while the humans negotiate? Will the on-demand workforce of the future even be human?
Wow. Next time you adjust your thermostat or squeeze the handle to fill up your gas tank, take a second to think about that invisible army human, or perhaps eventually otherwise standing by in the shadows to make sure that energy is always there when you need it. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning, keep learning, and we will catch you next time.